You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Luneed Lewis, and today I have the honor of introducing a very special guest to the show, Andrew Feinstein. Andrew is a best-selling author and meditation expert. He is kind, compassionate, and willing to help anyone enhance their lives through meditation. He is currently working for BeTime Meditation as their head of mindfulness, helping to bring meditation to the corporate world of New York City. Andrew speaks and teaches meditation all over the country, and he loves to talk about how the mornings are the time to fuel you for the day, and you need to take advantage of that time in order to make the most of your day. And Andrew is absolutely right, because what you do in the first 8 minutes of the day sets the tone for the rest of it. Andrew has this quote, which I love, and I'm going to talk to him more about it today. His quote is, "Happiness is my goal. The world is my target." Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a wonderful introduction. Couldn't have asked for a better one. Thank you for that and for having me. It is both. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. I really love your quote. The world is your target. I mean, you are bullseye ready.
Yeah. You know, a lot of this stuff, it's funny. The title of the book, that quote, some of the stuff that, you know, I live by life by is all stuff that kind of comes to you in like these lightning bolt moments where you're like, that sounds really good and sounds right. And then you just start writing it and placing it in places. And, you know, when it feels good, it constantly feels good. So having that reinforcer and, you know, hearing you say it now, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember why I wrote that down as something important. But yeah, I think, you know, that's been something from the get-go. Meditation for me has always been about trying to increase happiness in my life, be more comfortable with myself and, you know, live as well as I could. And, you know, I want people to be able to do that as well.
And you're targeting the whole world. And that's big. It's big shoes to fill, but it's so necessary.
Yeah.
You know, we so need it. I love the way you have niched it down, because you've done something unique here. You are coupling meditation with fitness, because people keep them separate. And so I want you as the expert to enlighten us a little bit about how fitness correlates with meditation.
Definitely. I think this is something that is starting to become widely more popular. Meditation originally and even, you know, to this day has these connotations associated with it. So if I asked the average person to tell me what meditation would look like, I'm sure that they would sit down cross-legged, close their eyes, put their hands on their lap, with their fingers closed together and start chanting Om, which is something that I myself definitely thought, you know, several years ago when my journey first started. And I think, you know, that connotation comes from a time in the 70s when meditation was often for, you know, at the time they were called hippies, or, you know, that was for a group of people that were a little bit alternative and out there. And, you know, in that time during the 70s, fitness was actually really taking off, and that started to become really mainstream. So you have, you know, fitness becoming mainstream, meditation staying alternative, and they kind of diverge from one another. And, you know, over the last few decades, there's trying to be a way to bring those two back together, because really, you know, life, yes, it's external, but, you know, a lot of the feelings we put out into the world externally come from that internal mindset. So being able to have a grasp on the internal before you look external, I think can really work wonders, not only in the gym, but also in everything that you do, you know, having that mindset to push yourself past that last set of weights or that last mile of a run. Or even just that mindset to shake stuff off, you know, during the day, if somebody bumps into you on the street or in the subway, you know, being able to not let that control who you are. That kind of is where I see the internal work of meditation, you know, showing up in day-to-day life.
Yes, there is no doubt about that. It relieves, it reduces stress and anxiety, and it makes you a lot more calmer. And I talk to everyone that meditates, elder entrepreneurs that meditate in the morning. They say they're just less angry, less anxious. And therefore, like you said, with the example of somebody bumping you, because you live in New York. And so exactly. somebody bumping you on the subway, bumping you on the street, you won't get mad and yell out, "Hey, I'm walking here."
Instead,
you'll just be like, you'll brush it off because it's minute. It's small. Yeah. And meditation has a way of doing that, calming the mind. But it's not just in the moment of meditation. It carries out throughout the day. And then you carry that throughout the week. And it's just like, it's a domino effect of peace. Yeah.
Definitely. And it's a practice, you know, you're constantly getting better at it. The same with, you know, fitness. You don't go to the gym once or go for one run and say, you know, okay, I've achieved all my lifelong goals. I'm done with that. You know, it's the same with meditation. It's something that you're constantly striving towards and, you know, trying to maintain that mental health as well as that physical health. And then, you know, when you start to get into it, you find new goals to reach. So, for some people, you know, that could be a marathon or, you know, Ironmans, as we were talking about, you know, before we started recording here, or, you know, in the mental headspace, it could be, you know, pushing yourself to do a longer retreat where you're sitting in silence and really just being there with yourself. And, you know, I think that the parallels between the physical and the mental are so profound. And, you know, that's kind of why I think they're so interesting to pair together.
Mm-hmm. Happiness, meditation, it's an inside job. And I like the way you put it earlier when you said, you know, fitness is external. We worry about the physical. We worry about getting fit and going to the gym and building muscles and getting in shape physically. But let's not forget about the mental. And that's what meditation is for. That's the internal muscle that needs that. That's why it's a practice that needs the repetition to actually build that muscle and get better at it and actually graduate to different levels of meditation.
Definitely. You know, what I think is so interesting and, you know, I'm reminded of it just based off the time of year. So I guess, you know, right now it's January 16th. January 17th is apparently the day that the majority of Americans give up their New Year's resolutions. You know, and I think fitness to me is still that like big New Year's resolution that everyone has. And for me, you know, I've almost dropped this word resolution and started looking more at intention. And I think, you know, my meditation practice has helped me to reframe some of these things and just start to think about my life in different ways and realizing that, you know, I'm always going to want to be physically fit, not for vanity purposes so much, but more for, you know, it feels really good when you can go out and run, you know, if it's a gorgeous day to be having that ability to run. Or, you know, right now in my training for this half marathon, I'm raising money for charity to do it and thinking about ways that, you know, I can use my abilities to give back to the world, leaves me with a feeling that is so good that I feel like, you know, when thinking about how people want to live their lives, especially around this time of setting resolutions, I would love to, you know, be able to encourage people to think broader and just say, you know, how do I want to show up daily? Not, you know, concretely in the sense of I would like to go to the gym for an hour, but, you know, in the sense of I'd like to be more physically fit, or I'd like to, you know, be healthier so I could achieve X, Y, and Z, and you know, being really intentional. I think, you know, that there's so many people out there that are just looking at this concretely, and that's what makes it really hard to continue. And especially even with meditation, you know, that idea of, oh, I need to sit for X amount of time a day is one that, you know, people start with in the very beginning. And I think it makes it really hard to continue.
So how do you meditate? What are the different ways of meditating, if not the traditional way?
Definitely. So I will keep this as brief as I can, as I definitely think this could get into, you know, a full hour long discussion, if not more. But the way I see meditation in my life currently, is, you know, as a tool to help me become more comfortable with myself. And really what I'm doing when I'm sitting down and, you know, closing my eyes is I'm taking time to be with myself, to try and be in the present moment. So, you know, a really good technique for that is focusing on the breath, because the breath is always present. There's always a new breath that you can focus on. And that practice, that skill is something that allows you to build towards a larger sense of just being more present. And why I think that is so valuable is that when we think about, and you know what, I'd love to even put you through this little exercise that I, you know, have in the book and that I, you know, put people through when we have these discussions, is asking you, you know, when was the last time you remember being truly happy? You know, in the most recent past, you know, what's kind of the first thing that comes to mind for you?
When was I truly happy?
Yeah.
When I graduated with my PhD, when my dissertation was supposed to be a one-day event for 4 hours, well, my chair and my committee had more questions. I had to come back the next day for another 2 hours. So I didn't sleep that night. I was And when I thought I was done, I had another day of it. So I had to prepare again. The anxiety, all that came up, everything, you name it, came up again for the second day. And when I finally wrapped up my presentation and answered all their questions, they sent me out for the deliberation process. The way you know you pass is when they come out to get you after you're outside waiting for them to make their decision. They come out and says, "Dr. Lewis, you may come back in." The minute I heard the word doctor, it's like pure joy just came over. And I almost cried because I just remember all the hard work that I put to get to this exact moment. So after that handshake, I was the happiest person. I literally went outside, found a grassy area with my, you know, dress to impress, and just lie on the grass.
I love that.
Face back and staring up at the sky. I was like, exhale, it is done.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's so amazing. And I ask almost everyone this when I can, because I think it goes to show that, you know, it's not these like bigger, long, drawn out things that, you know, make us really happy. I think it's these like little minute moments where you're really in the moment, where like it's so clear to you and you can remember everything that happened because you were really there. And that's the presentness that, you know, I've been trying to, at least in my own life, bring more frequently, where, you know, I can be present even in stuff that isn't the most exciting, even in, you know, a long, boring meeting. You know, if I'm being really present, can I enjoy it even just a little bit more? And, you know, my whole theory behind this is we have so little time on this earth. You know, there is a timeline for us. So why not be able to enjoy as much of it as you possibly could? And, you know, if meditation can be of value, and for me it really has, you know, it's kind of like, why not give it a try? You know, because I think, like you just articulated, everybody can call back a moment when they were really present, and if they could have more of that, I think, you know, you'd be crazy or sadistic or very cynical to say that you don't want more of that. Now the hard part is actually doing the practice to get more of that, because it's definitely not an easy practice, meditation.
I was going to say, and even to be present, I can understand the value in being present, even when when it's not exciting, even when you're going through a hard time, the struggle, life is kicking your butt and you're like, all right, it's one blow after another. You understand? Because that happens. And then to be able to find peace and be present in that moment, and being able to see that moment as a blessing, see that moment as an opportunity to teach you something, see that moment as an opportunity to learn, because you fail forward, right? You don't, if any failure, if is to help you grow in long term.
Yeah.
But on that note, Andrew, I want to add, I was listening to Dr. Lipton is his name, and he talks about the subconscious mind and how we operate at 95% of what we do is subconscious. We operate out of that. We live through that because our brain is designed to protect us in that way. And the 5% is conscious. That's the creative mind. And I think that's what that's the present mind, right? Is the ability to actually increase that, to be more present on a daily basis and not on autopilot. You know, we sometimes drive ourselves, we reach home, our destination, and sometimes we're like, how the heck did I get here? I know. I don't remember the left turn. I don't remember the light. I don't remember any of that. But that's, you're on autopilot. You're operating out of the subconscious mind. And if we can get more into the conscious, be present, and that is done by recognizing and observing our breath moment to moment, then we would be a lot happier. We'd be more present in our relationship. It would be more impactful, I believe.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, that example is actually an example that comes up a lot in meditation, this idea of driving home and not remembering the route itself. And, you know, often when you're in meditation, your mind can start to wander and all of a sudden you're down this thought hole and you have no idea how you got here. You know, you're thinking about your breath one second and the next thing you're thinking about rabbits dancing in a field and you have no idea where any of this came from. And that tends to happen a lot, you know, not just in meditation, but in work meetings while you're trying to do something productive, you know, on a run during the, you know, the, actually, funnily enough, fitness, why fitness I think is so amazing for a lot of people is you get to a point where you can't really think about anything, but can I get through this next, you know, 10 seconds? But, you know, digressing back, basically, the practice of meditation and why people feel like they fail at meditation is they think they're supposed to clear their mind and be totally focused on the breath. And, you know, it's really a practice of how long can you direct your attention in one place? And then how well can you bring your attention back when you've realized you've been distracted? So that's really, I think, the key that a lot of people miss is if you can realize you're distracted and then decide, okay, I don't want to be thinking about rabbits dancing in a field. I would like to be thinking about my breath. I think that is a moment of success, not a failure. And a lot of people see it as a failure for being distracted rather than a success from being able to pull yourself back from distraction.
Yeah, it'd be nice not to be so hard on ourselves when it could, and to know that's what that's supposed to happen. And you're learning to actually long term, you'll get better at it.
Yeah, I mean, but that's life in a sense. You know, the asking the brain to stop thinking is like asking the heart to stop beating. It's not possible. You know, you can get moments of clarity where you feel like the brain isn't thinking, but it's always functioning. You know, in the background to some extent. So really, what we're trying to do is just see if there's a way to have even just a little bit more control over, you know, what you want, even if it's just in that moment when somebody bumps into you on the subway or, you know, in that hard part of motivating yourself to get to the gym or anything, you know, that you're trying to do, just having that clarity to feel like you are more present and more aware with what's going on within you and, you know, outside of you. That's really, I think, the translatable elements of meditation in real life.
Yeah. And I know you're training for the marathon coming up in March and it's your first one. So I'm excited for you because I myself have done several of those and I understand the connection between mindfulness and actually running because 90% of it is mental. There was a research done that two marathon runners, one trained wicked hard and the other one just lie down. They told him to just lie down and picture him going through the finish line. Picture himself going through the finish line. You won't believe it. The guy who sat down and visualized and imagined it and concentrated, intentionally focused and meditating on finishing through the going through the finish line actually did better time.
Yeah.
Than the guy who trained.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask you, as you're training and you're meditating, how is that? How do you find that helping your training towards your marathon?
Yeah, I think, you know, as somebody that is looking to do this more for you know, charitable purposes as well as, you know, just liking the idea of pushing myself. And, you know, I find that I feel very alive when, you know, I'm putting myself through some, you know, difficult fitness regimens. I find that it, you know, makes me feel, and that's kind of why I really love fitness. And, you know, I'm not necessarily sitting there visualizing my race, even though, you know, I've worked with athletes that is really valuable for, you know, in both the professional level. You know, there are tons of stories out there, basketball players, football players, you know, envisioning shots, envisioning passes, you know, allowing them to, to see things and then, you know, not freeze up in the moment when they're actually doing it because they feel like, oh, I've seen this before. So I think that that is a very real element. I think for, you know, more of a, of an average Joe, like myself, not necessarily trying to compete at a top level, but just, you know, wanting to expend stuff, expend energy and, you know, be out there. The biggest, impact of my meditation practice that I see in my running training is that everything is temporary. And I think, you know, while I'm running, sometimes I'm at a place where the music feels so good. The weather outside feels great. I can't be smiling any bigger, I feel like. And then, you know, less than 5 minutes later, I could be in pain, wanting the run to end and, you know, feeling like this is the worst thing I could be doing. And then 4 minutes later, it could be amazing again. And I feel like, you know, similarly for people when they first meditate, you know, it feels really good at first. You're like, oh, this is nice. I don't really take a lot of time for myself. And then all of a sudden, you know, your back starts to hurt if you're sitting in, you know, meditative posture. And then eventually, if you stop focusing on it, or even if you focus on it more, it goes away and everything, you know, like I said, is temporary. And I think it allows you really to show yourself that, and I think it goes back to your point earlier that, you know, life has hard times in it. And if you can be more present in those hard times, one, you can enjoy them a little bit more. And two, you can recognize that they are temporary and that good times are ahead, but also that good times are temporary. And, you know, you kind of need to just be happy with whatever is going on because it's all amazing and it's all life.
It's all temporary. I like that because a new day is upon us, right? You just think about, don't take life so serious. Don't take yourself so seriously. Don't take any of it so seriously because it's all going to go away.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I know your book is it's titled Find Your Mind, Meditation for the Bold and Ambitious. Tell us a little bit about the book and also your background. You're so young and you're so deep in meditation already. How'd that happen?
Yes, I would love to. So the book is called Find Your Mind. It's available on Amazon. It's a 99-cent Kindle ebook. And then, you know, hard copy or paperback copy as well. But the theory behind the book was, you know, I wrote it while I was still in college, actually. I was a senior in college. So I was 21 at the time. And, I found meditation, a few years earlier and really found it to be a tool that changed my life. And, you know, really helped me feel like I could leave college being the person I wanted to be, feeling somewhat prepared. Obviously, you're never fully prepared for what life has to throw at you, but feeling like I had a tool in my back pocket that could help me when life started to go awry. And I wanted to share that with other people. So at first, I just started teaching my friends and I started to build this little robust community on my college campus, you know, that started with 1, 2, 3 people and grew to 40 and 50 to even 60 by the time, you know, I left in just, you know, one semester of people meditating, gathering, talking, really looking at, you know, a different side of the stereotypical college student that's out partying and, you know, then goes to school. But, you know, really there was this kind of new thing I felt like we were creating. And I wanted to put it out there for as many people as possible. So it's not just for the college student, because I feel like, you know, in this time when you're becoming a self-sustaining adult and trying to figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life, you know, that is a bold and ambitious undertaking. And I want to be able to show people that you can use a tool like meditation that helps you relax, helps you de-stress in some senses, you know, and helps you become more comfortable with yourself, really, and be more present, really, you know, that is a tool that can help you in that strive to be bold and ambitious, that it's not something that you need to wait until you've achieved something to find, but that you can find it now and it will help you achieve what you're looking to achieve. And I think that, you know, that was the whole concept behind writing the book, was writing it for that demographic from somebody who was in that demographic. And I felt like, you know, it resonated a lot with, you know, both my contemporaries and people, you know, way older than me, since we are always striving for something.
You are truly a trailblazer, man.
Well, I thank you. I think, you know, I don't really necessarily see myself as such. I think I'm just out there trying to share with anybody that will listen, and hope that, you know, even one sentence, even one word, and that was the goal of the book, was I'm just going to write this thing. And if one word or one sentence helps somebody, then I achieved everything that I set out to do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It was not your average college student, not the ones I went to school with. I wasn't that person either.
I wasn't that person to start. It's where I ended, but you know, there were definitely some bumps along the road.
Yeah. I want to get into transcendental meditation. Mm-hmm. It is big, and there's books on it. Actresses, movie actors are all doing it. Why transcendental meditation?
Yeah. So I actually did a ton of research on this writing my book, because I was finding the same thing as you, that there were so many famous people that were, you know, swearing by transcendental meditation. I ended up not putting it in the book, because everything I wanted to provide to people, I wanted it to feel completely free. And, transcendental meditation does have a cost, to learning it, which, you know, for the people that practice it, I have nothing against them. I think that there is this subtle war almost between people that are doing, you know, what is now coined mindfulness meditation or breath focused meditation and transcendental meditation. I have nothing against anybody doing transcendental meditation, but, you know, for me, I have found, these skills and these tools, you know, of mindful meditation to be really useful in my life. But where transcendental meditation really took off, it was started by a yogi who became very close with the Beatles. And he was actually on, his name was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and he was on tour with the Beatles and would teach them transcendental meditation, you know, a technique that is a mix of, you know, ancient Vedic or ancient Hindu techniques, as well as, you know, his own kind of spin on how to, you know, drop into a meditative state with pretty much no effort and ease. But it got a lot of popularity from, you know, his journey with the Beatles, and then it kind of spread to people larger than that. And, you know, it was passed on, to, a few people here in the East that had, you know, relationships with, famous people, and it started to kind of spread like wildfire. And the concept or from, you know, my understanding, and I'm not trained in transcendental meditation, but from the conversations I've had with people who are, and with teachers, of transcendental meditation, is that, you know, they use a mantra, a word that has no, emotional ties to your life. It's more about the sound, and the repetition of that sound helps you drop below the wandering mind and sit in, almost what they call, you know, kind of like an effortless meditative state. So they're prescribed is, 20 minutes a day. And I think, there are tons of people who swear by it and say that it is amazing. I know that I have not personally experienced it, but, anybody that is interested and, you know, has the money to, pay. And I know they have, you know, foundations that are trying to, work to waive those fees for certain groups, and they're doing some amazing work. You know, so long-winded explanation of what transcendental meditation is. It is not my area of expertise per se, but that's kind of where it's gotten its popularity and kind of where it started. And, you know, is still around today. And I, you know, personally, I think any form of meditation, any form of insight work is benefiting the world. So, I hope, you know, for the world's sake, that they keep getting bigger and keep being able to spread it to more people.
Absolutely. And the benefits are endless. I mean, just to name a few, it improves sleep. You have a greater sense of clarity and productivity. And I think that goes on for meditation in general, too. Yeah. Like these benefits that I'm talking about, lower blood pressure, greater sense of calmness throughout the day, which we talked about earlier during our talk, right? Reduce cortisol, lower risk of heart attack. I mean, it's endless, the health benefits to meditation.
Definitely. And I think the biggest one for me, you know, and what I said earlier is it just allows you to become more comfortable with yourself, you know, taking that time every day, sitting with yourself, watching thoughts as they come up, realizing how much your brain wanders. You know, we're stuck with ourselves for the rest of our lives. So you might as well give some time and effort to seeing who that person is when you're not doing and you're just being.
Mm-hmm. So who you can be, you know, and enable for you to do anything, you have to be something, right? You have to grow. Yeah. You have to get to the next level. So that brings us to the morning routine, because I know I meditated on a daily basis. So I'm curious to see how robust your morning routine is. How do you get up, dress up, and show up?
Definitely. And I think, you know, a lot of people would be shocked to hear that, you know, my morning routine is definitely not always the most consistent. I think there are similar elements that I try to do every single day. So, you know, presentness, which is, you know, kind of my shorthand for meditation, is always something that I make sure is prevalent in my morning routine. You know, depending on the day and depending on when I wake up, and sometimes my body just needs more sleep and I can't, you know, get up at that first alarm. You know, so I try to make sure if I can, ideally I'm doing, you know, 15 to 30 minutes of meditation when there's time. Some days, you know, and this is full disclosure, not to show people that, you know, that I slack on my routines, but to show that, you know, I'm flexible with myself and I understand that, you know, it's life and you can't always be at your best. But, you know, some days I'll just try and make sure I take one breath before I walk out the door, because there's always time for that. So, you know, to me, I look at it and I say that beyond the ideal, you know, what actually ends up happening are these themes that are present. So, presentness being the most popular, and then, you know, insight is number two. So, you know, whether it's spending some time journaling, or, you know, being able to just toy with, you know, how did the day go yesterday, sitting and reflecting on that. And you know, a new practice I've been bringing into this year is trying to ask myself, you know, what was the best part of yesterday and how can I get more of that today? And sometimes it can be as simple as, well, I, you know, smiled at somebody on the street and they smiled back and that felt good. You know, and those are things that might go unrecognized, but they can have such a profound impact if you can realize what they are. And then I guess, you know, more concretely, I do drink coffee. So that's a big part of my day. There's, you know, a nostalgia element to the smell of coffee that I think, puts me in a right mindset. And I always, you know, enjoy a cup on my own, you know, sitting, looking out the window, trying to just, you know, take that time for myself as much as I can in that morning.
Absolutely. Being present and being able to calm the mind down early in the morning. I really appreciate this. I really enjoy that. There's a great quote that says, "The struggle ends when gratitude begins." Yeah. And having that in the morning, it really, really get the serotonin flowing, get the endorphins flowing, get the happy hormones going to ride you through the rest of the day.
Yeah. And at the end of every meditation, I take a moment to be grateful that I sat down. And I think that has helped me keep my practice going, where, you know, I'm being very vulnerable with myself and saying, you know, yeah, today maybe didn't go so well, or your mind was wandering a lot, but hey, you got here. And you know, you could have chosen to just go about your day, but you didn't. And that's enough.
That's recognition right there. Yeah. And in the journaling and reflecting on what worked and what didn't work, because that's the only way you're going to be able to improve on what didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately, we are living that external world. So, you know, you kind of got to figure out how you want to show up in that external world. But with that insight knowledge is how you can, I think, at least, you know, be more intentional about how you show up every day.
Absolutely. My goodness. Thank you for sharing. This was good stuff. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, it couldn't happen without, you know, all the work that you're doing and, you know, bringing it out of people like myself. I'm only as good as the puppet master, if you will.
Well put. How do we connect with you, Andrew?
Yeah, most of the connection with me these days can be on Instagram. I'm at Find Your Mind, F-E-I-N, Your Mind, spelt like my last name, is a play on words with the Find Your Mind book. I definitely, you know, for anybody wanting to learn more, I would highly recommend checking out the book. It's long. It has a lot. It doesn't need to be read in its entirety. You know, it was written so that people could get snippets of information even from just the first few pages, but really has, you know, kind of your full explanation on how to start a practice, how to keep a practice, other tips and techniques for being mindful beyond just seated meditation, and then really cool case studies of experts, not in just meditation, but in various fields that are using meditation to make them better at what they do. So athletes, CEOs, and, you know, a bunch of other interesting stories that I found in my research. So, you know, for anybody that found this interesting, I would highly recommend that. And then, you know, my website, fymmeditation.com is another great place, a resource where people can contact me directly with any questions that they may have, or, you know, I respond to Instagram DMs. So either way, you know, I'm happy to talk to anybody about meditation, like, you know, you said in the intro and I echoed throughout the podcast. But yeah, I'm here for just, you know, spreading that happiness. And like I said, it's to the world, not just to this small population of people around me.
What does your session look like?
Really, these sessions are super, super interesting. And they started with, they've always been about getting to know somebody as an individual. And, you know, I find that, you know, like I've been articulating, meditation has really been a practice of me getting comfortable with myself. And I do think that there is a place for meditation in everyone's lives. But I think they need to find or see that that exists. And I found that just telling people, oh, why don't you give meditation a try? Or even saying, you know, okay, let's do a meditation together, wasn't enough to show people that there was value in it. So, you know, these sessions are really, you know, the majority of the time is spent learning about people and seeing, you know, like, you know, a little snippet of what we did earlier of asking, you know, a happy moment in your life and then trying to figure out, you know, what people are striving for, what they're afraid of, and sharing, you know, my own fears, my own goals and showing that vulnerability so people feel like they can really open up. And I think, you know, we get to a really cool place of, okay, I see what I want. I see what I'm scared of. And now I see why meditation might be something that can really help me, beyond just, you know, reducing stress and reducing calm, increasing calm and reducing stress. And then that's when we'll kind of dive into an example session. And, you know, I really try to give people tools to be their own teacher. And then I am there for anything that they may need. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, teach a man and woman to fish and, rather than just catching the fish for them.
Yeah. They'll eat for one day versus eat for a lifetime.
Exactly.
Really, really good stuff. I will put your contact information on the show notes, your website, and the book as well. I really thank you for coming on the show. I love all that you said today about meditation. And just to give the audience a brief recap, you coined fitness with meditation. And then I get a lot of fitness coaches that come on. I get a lot of trainers that come on, but they've never put the two together. And I can see how it relates because meditation is internal work. Fitness is external work and they go hand in hand. And if you work on the meditation and the internal calmness, you will perform better.
Yeah.
And you said it's all temporary. It was what you're learning with meditation and also with running. Like it will all go away. So don't take it too seriously or be too attached.
Yeah.
To any feeling or any moment. And in the art of being present and being focusing and realizing, observing your breath, will actually get you grounded, get you focused on the present moment in particular. Anything you'd like to add?
No, I couldn't have summed it up better myself. I'm just very appreciative, you know, to have the time to talk and to be around amazing people like yourself. And, I just, you know, I hope we get more of this as the world starts to embrace, you know, the inner work, hopefully as much as it embraces the outer work.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Of course. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, all right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.